I'm Shelley Schlender. Today, let's hear three stories about heart disease and heart attack prevention. One from KGNU DJ Fergus Stone, one from KGNU station manager Sam Fuqua, and one from some local musicians. We'll also talk with a psychiatrist who coaches people about one of the leading causes of heart disease, which is stress. So let's get started, beginning with Fergus. Hey, Fergus, if you were going to make a sound of a heartbeat without using a real heartbeat, what would you do?
Oh, I think it would have to be some sort of drum device. In school, they taught us to say lub-dup, 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 but that's not what it sounds like. More of a boom, 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 boom.
We're at Fergus Stone's recording studio, Adios Amigos. So we also try to record.
This is a veterinary microphone. I mean, veterinary stethoscope.
Huh? Well, all right, let's pull the little rubber O-ring off and see if we can...
My heart? And his.
Maybe I'm dead. Not picking up any heartbeat. Maybe I should check my pulse.
All this is because Fergus has a story about hearts, his own.
It started in my chest. It wasn't anything that I would call pain, but there was a feeling. I became aware of my chest in a way that I'm not usually made to be aware of it. And I also found that I began to breathe without having exerted, and I wasn't really able to consciously control my rate of breathing. I was breathing
in the emergency room. Doctors put a stent in Fergus's arteries
in order to prevent restenosis, the reclosing of the artery. They place a little metal cage which, when released, expands and pushes out. Kind of like a slinky, I've always imagined, that it holds the shape and keeps things from collapsing back where it was expanded. Took a little while to adjust to the drugs. I take an ACE inhibitor and, well, anyway, two blood pressure drugs and a cholesterol drug, a statin. When I was done with it all, the doctor said, "You tried to have a heart attack, but you failed." In other words, it wasn't a full-blown heart attack, and there was no damage to the heart muscle. He let me go and said, no restrictions, although he did recommend that I cut down on saturated fat and exercise much more regularly and take the medication.
As for what led to this problem, Fergus has this story.
This followed a period of a few months when our family was saying goodbye to an elderly member. My wife's mother was in the dying process, and we were spending long hours with her in her deathbed. But it wasn't a quick process. It took a long time, and so many days we were there by her side, and at the end of a long session of that, it'd be too late to cook dinner, so you'd go grab a bite, and late at night, the only thing that was open was Denny's. And so could well have been that after a lifetime of not paying much attention to my diet, a couple of months of Denny's was enough to put me over the top.
Fergus focuses on the fast food as a reason for his almost heart attack. But you've got to wonder, when he had a relative who was dying, does that count as one of the leading causes of heart disease? Which is stress.
I gave up the sausages. Other than that, it's about the same. I'm an omnivore, but with a dairy allergy. So I lay off the pizza, and I have for a long time. That's probably why I'm still alive. Boom, 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 boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom, boom. For a story about someone who's trying to prevent heart disease, even before he has an almost heart attack, let's go now to KGNU station manager Sam Fuqua, sitting right now in a doctor's office,
I like it.
Front
I
range preventative imaging in Boulder.
Just filling out the paperwork.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You didn't circle high cholesterol. You circled in between high and normal.
That's right. I'm not sure it's high enough to circle high.
Does that make sense?
Okay, so here you are filling out the paperwork.
Yes, for my second heart scan. I had one in December of 2008, so a little over 4 years ago.
Some people get nervous about this. Are you?
Yes, I tend to, before major tests get, if I think about it, I get nervous. I tend to go to my, you know, fears, my worst outcomes, like they're going to find that my heart is now full of calcium or that I have some rare malady of heart cancer or something. I mean, I tend to just really be in the hypochondriac mode before these kinds of tests.
Why are you doing it?
I guess I want to know. You know, 4 years ago, the scan was average for a man my age at the time. So I felt pretty good about that. But I also know that my cholesterol levels have still been higher than my doctor would like to see them. He's recommended I go on statins. I've resisted that. I think it's important for us both to have a check-in on what the heart scan reveals and, you know, see if I'm better, worse, what have you. I have a little bit of concern, I have to say, that I have been less disciplined with my diet over the past few years. So I'm wondering if that sense I have that I haven't been eating as good a diet as I should will, you know, show up in this heart scan.
Well, if it doesn't, you get to eat anything you want.
That's right. I'll be spooning butter out of the tub.
Sam's cholesterol is slightly elevated, but his biggest personal risk is that his dad died of cardiovascular disease.
When I was 10, my dad had a massive cerebral hemorrhage and lingered for a while in hospital and nursing home, but died completely incapacitated. He was 49 or 50 when that happened.
That's hard to lose a parent.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a central event of our childhood, yeah.
It's possible to look for a lot of reasons why Sam's dad had a stroke, reasons that don't involve any inherited risk of the disease.
He had high blood pressure, and he was overweight, kind of a workaholic type. He also had epilepsy, which he had managed since young adulthood through medication. So I think all of those factors probably combined.
But still, to be on the safe side, about 4 years ago, when Sam was 45, his doctor encouraged him to have a calcium heart scan. Many health experts say that's the best way to check for a buildup of dangerous plaque in the arteries. Now, it's not an inexpensive test. A calcium scan, even at a discount, often costs around $200. And that's not generally paid for by insurance. But it can give a lot of information about the vessels that feed the heart and the heart itself.
So this is our scanning room.
Front Range Preventative Imaging's Director of Patient Liaison, Lindsay Woods, says it's time to take the test.
So do I just lay down on this?
Yeah, Diane's going to come in and she's going to have you lay down. You will not need to disrobe at all.
Excellent.
Other than she is going to place three electrodes on your skin.
Okay. And will I be strapped down and manacled? And?
Well, the handcuffs. But, you know, they're lined with fur, so
good,
you'll be
good,
okay
good.
With them. The head strap sometimes gets bothersome.
I'm ready.
All right.
Good.
No, there's nothing like that. And the nice thing is you don't do anything but lay there and hold your breath. And yeah. Diane will tell you over the loudspeaker when to do the breath holds. And that's pretty much it.
Great.
You know, filling out the paperwork took longer than getting the heart scan is going to take.
Not surprising in this day and age. Okay, great.
Sam lies down on a bed that has a gigantic donut-shaped machine up near his head. That's the machine that will take the scans that they want to have of Sam's heart and arteries.
So now what Christy's doing is lining everything up, getting all the calibrations right, setting it up so it's specifically tuned to Sam, Sam's weight, Sam's body.
Take in a breath. Let it out. Another breath in. Let it out. And now a deep breath in and hold it. Thank you.
down if you'd like. Just keep still for a few minutes while I check this.
Okay.
Do you ever forget to tell someone to breathe again?
Not yet, but...
And I held my breath for like 30 seconds. A new record.
Okay, that's it.
Okay.
So I'll get the wires.
Oh, okay.
I will let you be the bad guy and take the stickers off.
Okay.
Okay, there's one on the right, two on the left.
Okay.
Those can go in the trash.
Ow.
Yes, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
That's why I let you do it.
Yeah, good plan.
I can toss those for you.
Okay.
Next, Front Range Preventative Imaging Center's Lindsay Woods shows Sam the preliminary test results. They're not what he was hoping for.
Your score went from 3 to 18.9.
Jeez.
On your first heart scan, you only had one. They call these lesions.
Yeah.
I don't really like that word, lesions. I like to call it spots.
Mm-hmm.
So these are your four major coronary arteries. You have two spots in your left main. You still only have one. So you developed another spot.
And this is a spot of plaque?
Yes.
Okay.
And you now have one spot in your right coronary artery. You used to have none. Your total calcium score is 18. Now, if you look at this little chart down here, you went from a minimal plaque burden... That's 1 to 10, a score of 1 to 10,
yeah.
3 fits in there, to a mild plaque burden.
Yeah.
And that's 11 to 100. You're still on the low side of mild, but you went from minimal to mild.
Right, and it is, you know, going from 3, 4 years ago, to 18 is a six-fold increase.
Yes, and this is
there's a lot to explain.
Page 2.
In the end, more important about explaining the test... is the question of what to do about the results.
You're 49 years old, and now you know that your body's laying down plaque.
Yeah.
That's good news. You know that now. The second thing is your numbers are still really low.
Okay.
So you don't have gobs of plaque. One of Dr. Blanchette has a patient who's in his 70s, I believe. His calcium score, yours is now... 18.
Yeah.
His is over 9,000.
9,000.
Which is silly. It's so high.
Still alive.
Not only is he alive, but it's been 9,000 for 4 or 5 years now. He has less of a risk of having a coronary event than you or I do. That's the beauty of not only this technology, but it's in the literature. This is what Dr. Blanchette talks about.
Well, but I'm confused there because if there's a guy like that with so mm-hmm. much calcium who's doing fine, should I even care that I've, you know, have this much calcium?
Or? Well, that's up to you. Your plaque is unstable because it's growing.
Yeah.
Unstable plaque can rupture whether your score is 1 or your score is 9,000. You need is one little piece of plaque, unstable plaque, to rupture, get into an artery, form a blood clot because your body's going to attack it like a foreign body.
So can I explain mm-hmm.
yeah,
that here? That it's as though plaque is kind of like somebody being whipped with a fresh cat of nine tails. And when it first happens, that's when it's the most vulnerable to infection and problems happening and, you know, scabs breaking off. After, you know, 5 years after somebody had been whipped badly like that, say by the Taliban.
I like your analogy. It's interesting.
Then, they use the cat of nine tails?
I don't know what they do. I think that was pirates. Okay. But in any event, there would be scars, and the scars would be there for life, but they would really no longer be something that's vulnerable to the scabs breaking off or infection happening. They would just be scars.
So if you can stabilize the plaque, that's going to be less of a worry than... seeing this increase, because then it's unstable.
Exactly. You are growing plaque.
And so someone who had a score of 9,000, which is just incredibly high, if that's their score that stayed that way for 5 years, that just will probably be always there as a memento of the fact that they had a lot of plaqueing happening that used to be unstable. But since it stayed steady, then it's not unstable anymore, so it's really not an issue.
Or like Shelley said, it's old scarring.
Yeah.
He has a lot of old scarring, but it's stable.
Yeah. So a piece of plaque breaks off blocks an artery. This is
where forms a blood clot.
Blood clot, yeah. And that's
heart attack.
Yeah, heart attack. Okay. So what can I do to prevent that? Anything at this point? I mean, the idea is to stabilize the calcium, right?
The idea is to stabilize the calcium.
The number one cause of plaque buildup in heart disease? Lindsay Wood says that it is stress.
MESA Heart Study just came out. Dr. Blanchette talks about the MESA Heart Study. It stands for Multi-Ethnic Study on Atherosclerosis. The two great things about this study is, number one, it was sponsored by the National Institute of Health, so nobody had a financial interest in the results of this study, which made it kind of a really clean study. The other fascinating thing that came out of the MESA Heart Study was that the two risk factors that are hands down by far the most predictive of heart disease is family history and stress. Not cholesterol, not diet, not exercise, not how much you weigh. So, how's your family history? Mother, father, sister, brother?
My dad had a, I guess, a massive cerebral hemorrhage when he was about my age.
Okay.
And he had high blood pressure and overweight, you know, workaholic type. I don't know that he had any serious heart disease. That's never been brought up in the, you know, when we've quizzed my mom about this.
Is he still alive?
No, he died.
When
of
did
that.
He, oh, of the cerebral hemorrhage.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was incapacitated for a while longer, and I think eventually got pneumonia in a nursing home or something, but it was that really crippled him,
uh-huh.
You know.
And how old was he when he
died? He was about my age, 49 or 50.
So he was very, very young.
Yeah.
And he had some kind of vascular stuff going on.
Yes.
And you said he was a workaholic?
Yeah.
So that tells me that he's probably pretty high stress.
Yeah, and he was trying to manage his weight, but he was overweight, and he was on medication for high blood pressure. And he also had epilepsy, which he had managed since he was a young adult through medication. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I only think about this stuff recently, so I don't have any his physicians to go back and talk to, but I think all those things combined could lead to serious problem in the brain, yeah.
How about you with stress?
Yeah, off and on, but
stress.
So I would say I have had stress in my life. I've thought that I've been able to manage it with exercise and outside activities,
mm-hmm.
You know. But it is a busy life, yeah, and some of it is stressful. So it's there, I would say. So both those things you just told me were the greatest risk factors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you have two of the biggest risk factors.
Yeah, those things, like if your body's under stress and you have the genetic predisposition, those things alone can increase the calcium buildup that we're seeing here?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And interestingly, in the MESA Heart Study, when they looked at first family history and stress, and they kind of gave you your risk assessment, when they started adding on the things that we are used to thinking about, like diet, exercise, your cholesterol numbers, those diluted your risk factor from family history and stress. So they were not helpful. So, back to you. You got a wake-up call.
Yeah, clearly.
And truly, Sam, it is not tough to stabilize this. It may take you one or two more scans, but you can do it without a whole lot of drastic changes.
But Lindsay, you've talked about how stress is the key thing to change.
Yeah, it's a toughie.
You can't take anti-stress in a pill.
No, but you can do yoga. If you're aware of stress, take downtime for yourself. I mean, literally, set aside 15 minutes a day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm an extremely busy person, too. But, and I have calcium score, and we couldn't stabilize mine. I have no family history. All my labs are perfect. My whole thing is stress.
Hmm.
And it took 3 heart scans to stabilize it.
Did you just keep adding in more yoga?
I did some yoga for a while, but yoga's not my thing. And I didn't keep it up.
So you didn't have enough fun doing yoga, so what did you do?
I went competitive dancing with a guy 30 years younger than I am. That's fun. That works great. And I also set aside time for myself. I never used to do that. I was the kind of person that when the alarm went off, I went flying out of bed. And I don't do that anymore. I wake up, I stay in bed for a minimum of 30 minutes. And sometimes if I don't feel like doing whatever, meditation thing, which is hard for me to do on a regular basis, yeah. I can do it sporadically. Sometimes I just lay there and stay awake and calmly think.
Well, Lindsay, you're saying that you reduced your stress by becoming a competitive dancer.
Yeah, it sounds like an oxymoron, doesn't it?
But it's something you really like.
I really like, and it's a great excuse to wear the bling and be in front of an audience and cameras. That's my whole thing, you know? The competitive part is really like secondary.
Well, Sam, you've thought of competitive...
What?
I don't think I'll be competitive dancing, no. I don't think... but, I will take to heart the... message that I need to pay attention more to stress.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing I can do about the genetics. So, and I think I can also, you know, up the intake of the good oils and pay more attention to the bad ones. The fried foods, I think, is the main thing there. And it sounds like I should come back in, you know, sooner than 4 years, which is the time
Absolutely.
Between this one and my last one. Yeah.
But now you were, I have no problem with you coming back when you had a score of 3,
mm-hmm.
coming back in certainly 2 to 3 years,
yeah.
even 4 years. That's actually okay. And Dr. Blanchette would have said the same
yeah.
thing. Now that we know that you're kind of galloping with the plaque here,
yeah.
We'll rein you back in and have you come back in a year.
Okay.
But does dealing with stress need to mean making a major change in life? And does it really only involve our emotions, or does it tie back with how we eat, how we exercise, how about how we sleep? For more on that, here's a medical doctor who's trained in the intricate working of not only our bodies, but our feelings and the way we think. He's Dr. Will Vandeveer. Vandeveer is a Boulder psychiatrist. The first question for Dr. Vandeveer was pretty simple. It's this. Do people really recognize when they're getting stressed?
We know now that stress plays a big role in heart disease. I have a joke with one of my cardiologist friends that I see the women and he sees the men. In other words, men tend to show up with stress, anxiety, depression at a cardiologist's office. Women tend to call me, more stereotypically at least.
There have been some meta-analyses, some big studies of a lot of studies, that seem to indicate that stress is one of the leading drivers of having a heart attack. Do you think that's true?
I can't speak for the cardiology side, but as a mental health professional, I see huge problems with stress in our culture.
If someone doesn't say that they're stressed, can they still be stressed?
Yes. A person who's fairly well-resourced in their life can appear to be calm on the surface while the duck's feet are paddling very quickly under the surface. So there can be a way that our hormones are having to work overtime.
What can people do if they're told, maybe you're stressed, but you have to pay the bills and you have to stick with the job that you have, and what do you do?
My approach is to help people find resources for relaxation as opposed to trying to name and identify and eliminate a particular stressor that might not be something you can change, like a difficult job, for example. Meditation practice, yoga practice is terrific, Tai Chi. Anything that helps you slow down and connect with your body is a good resource. To some degree, we're inured to stress in our culture. We are trained to push through it. We're conditioned not to stop and pause and feel it. Medical training itself teaches doctors to push through stress and not address it, not face it. That's why heart disease rates are very high in physicians and suicide rates, for example. But it's not limited to physicians at all.
Many people will say that stress is totally independent of other lifestyle issues. Stress and happiness matter more than, for instance, what someone eats. Do you think those two are unrelated, or do you think they're connected?
I think they're related, because I think a person who is not eating a healthy diet is going to have more stress in their body than a person who isn't, regardless of what their emotional stress is. In general, in my practice, a lot of the inflammation or stress in the gut is caused by too much grain in the diet, or too many simple carbohydrates and sugars, for example.
What do you eat?
For me personally, I have a sensitivity to gluten, dairy, soy, and corn, so I try not to eat any of those. And that's helped me feel a lot more relaxed and less irritable.
You feel less stressed because of how you eat?
Yes.
And you're a psychiatrist, and you just said that.
Right. Well, you know, I think there's a new way on the horizon of practicing psychiatry that takes more into account than just emotional stress, but other areas where inflammation can be created in the body.
That's Dr. Will Vanderveer, a Boulder psychiatrist, talking about heart health and talking about various ways to raise and lower stress. There are no one-size-fits-all answers to these questions about health, and heart health in particular. There are many, many choices that people must make, and in the end, the answer is highly individual. Which is why the musicians, who have helped us with music throughout the series, perhaps one more story from them is the way to go.
I'm David Harris, and I'm a singer. I'm also a composer and a conductor.
My name is Sheldon Sands, and I'm a composer and keyboard player. The human heartbeat is the essential rhythm, and I think musicians get that. It's a steady pulse going on within us, and yet everything flourishes around it. And, you know, a lot of jazz music, almost any music, has an essential beat, and yet there's all these polyrhythms, there's all these amalgamations that flow in and around that beat. But at the essence is that core. Our heart is that core. And just like, you know, the essential rhythm in any musical composition is holding the core, whether that is being pronounced loudly or not. I've studied a bit the areas of health and healing as it relates to music.
And what do you think that you're doing that helps you stay healthy?
Some of it's just dumb luck, you know, but I am very, you know, I exercise almost every day. I eat a fairly good diet. Probably should have a little less coffee. That's not so great for the heart, probably. You know, all the things of being young at heart, of being, you know, all those ways that we refer to the heart, I think I try to do things that, you know, I try to live a life that's heartful, that's, you know, you wake up in the morning and you feel motivated to be alive. Somehow that those things, I believe in some ways, actually help the physical heart.
This concludes part 4 of the Heart Attack Chronicles. For more on the series or to hear past episodes, go to kgnu.org/metro or go to eatyourradio.org and type in the search words heart attack. If you have questions or comments about this series, then Thursday morning at 8:30 you can join for a call-in show that features 3 of the experts we've talked with in this series and Boulder cardiologist Jamie Doucette. For KGNU, I'm Shelley Schlender. Mm-hmm.